I declare this meeting open. We have two items on the agenda. Hi. The one is the adoption of minutes, and the second one is the follow-up briefing by the Department of Transport on the road maintenance program. We will start with the second item due to the fact that we do not correct, but one of our members will be joining us later. He's heard someone else, and he has apologized. That is Honorable Kronbock. Yes, he is coming late. We welcome the department, and we would want to explain before we give them an opportunity to make their presentation as to why we are calling this meeting. We have called this a follow-up meeting. We've called this meeting today because we were part of ensuring that there is focus both at Parliament level as well as at the department's level in terms of the lack of maintenance of our road infrastructure. And this portfolio committee pushed to ensure that there was allocation of funding dedicated to road maintenance. We also raised the issue of the need to upgrade the rural roads from gravel up to a level where rural communities would also have same standards of roads to those that are enjoyed by communities in urban areas. We were also at that time mindful of the fact that there isn't enough a budget, as well as that there has been declarations with regard to the upgrading of rural gravel roads, a declaration of the SADC that was declared in 2006, and South Africa was charged with the responsibility of leading that program of facilitating the upgrading of rural gravel roads to low-volume silt roads. And in trying to facilitate that a specific focus is paid to that, we went to a level as this portfolio committee of doing our own research in terms of what is available as alternative methods that can be used to upgrade the conditions of rural roads. Whilst we were also discussing that, the minister, the former minister of the department, Honorable Sibusiso Sondebele, announced that his department was to prioritize the upgrading of road infrastructure to schools and clinics in line with the priorities of government in terms of service delivery between 2009 and 2014. So this meeting is informed by that in terms of the program. After the approval of the Road Maintenance Fund by Cabinet and allocation of specific funding, this committee also looked at the institutional arrangement in the country and what was being developed by the Department of Transport at national level and how that was going to be cascaded down to provinces and local government. Because as we were discussing the issue of funding, the department was developing a program called Samba Sonke, which was then a program that it looks at how the potholes, the maintenance program would be undertaken in the country and how the upgrading of inadequate infrastructure and rural roads was going to be undertaken in the country. And our understanding was that the department has got a coordination and a policy formulation mandate, which then means even the model, if any person comes into South Africa to say we want to learn from South Africa how roads are maintained, the first call would be the Department of Transport at national level. And the Department of Transport at national level would have then cascaded that down to provinces and local government. We then undertook a study tour immediately after the approval of the budget, which had a road maintenance allocation, to visit provinces that we were monitoring through the media as provinces that are having serious problems, where marches have taken place, where there had been protests, and also there had been letters written to myself by people from those areas. And we visited Northwest because there had been a letter that came through a member of parliament who doesn't serve in this committee, but who has a constituency office in Rustenburg. And she pointed us to a problem where bus owners and taxi owners had engaged in a march because of the state of the roads in that area. We also responded to a letter that was from KwaZulu-Natal in the area of Empangeni, where a member of the community wrote a letter to say this was the state of the roads. We responded also to letters that were coming from the Eastern Cape in the area of Lusikisiki, where communities were complaining about the road infrastructure and the conditions in the bus ranks, the congestion of the roads. We also responded to what was being raised by the members of the opposition party, the DA, in terms of the state of the potholes in the country and the money that was being used, lost by the government in terms of having to pay penalties when people have been injured. So we listened to all those things and then undertook to go to those areas and look at what was being raised. To our disappointment, when we arrived in Northwest, we discovered that they were not following the plan that was being developed at national level to address the problems on the ground. We visited, the roads will be sharing information with you of what we came across. We also went to Mbangan, where we had received a letter. We'll share the information with you. We also went to Eastern Cape twice and Harding. Harding, we went there because I had come across a situation where in December 2009, I witnessed the repair of the road there, of the potholes there, where a foreign product, cement, was used to repair an asphalt road. So this follow-up then meeting is a meeting that is beginning to say, what is it that the department has done? Are we responding to what is happening on the ground? And what problems are we encountering? And from our side as a portfolio committee, we will also share with you what is it that we are seeing as a problem. Like, for instance, in the Eastern Cape, we were not able to interact with the people that are responsible for the maintenance of the roads because that responsibility doesn't lie with the Department of Transport in the Eastern Cape. It is with Public Works, and Public Works doesn't have any interaction with us. They account to the Portfolio Committee of Public Works. So it is Public Works from here that would go to Eastern Cape and then. So there are those situations where the institutional arrangement of the country is also requiring us to look at and say, and hear also from the department as to how what is discussed in the MINMEC of transport gets understood in the MINMEC of Public Works, if roads in provinces sits in Public Works Department. Honorable Orin?
Just so I understand correctly, did you say that in the Eastern Cape roads are maintained by Public Works, or did I misunderstand that? I think I might have missed. Just to clarify, I think maybe okay. I was.
Okay. The Minister, the MEC, for transport in the Eastern Cape is also MEC for Public Works. Okay. In KwaZulu Natal, in some provinces, roads is not part of the Department of Transport. It is roads and Public Works, which then creates, So, if then roads are under Public Works, it would then mean that the MEC responsible for roads would not attend MINMEC of transport, would only attend MINMEC of Public Works, which is something that we need to understand as to how then what is being developed in the Department of Transport gets then translated to have a common understanding by the Department of Public Works, and how does the accountability line happens, because at national level we don't have a department called Public Works and Roads or Roads and Public Works. We have a Department of Transport. So we will then ask the department to make a presentation, and we will also show you the pictures of what we saw and the profit.
So thanks, Chairperson. Thanks very much for the invite. Thanks to the portfolio committee. I was sharing with one member that it's been a long time. Chairperson, there is, of course, I suppose a slight limit because it's a follow-up meeting. So what we've prepared is really driven by what we understood, and it may be slightly detailed or some of it not exactly on point as you've just briefed. So what I would request is the committee allow us to do the presentation that we've prepared based on what we understood to the outstanding issues. I would request, Chair, that after the presentation we be allowed, because on a number of the issues we've just foregrounded, we do have a sense of perspective of what really the issues are, and that may not necessarily be contained in the presentation. So if that's in order, I would really like to quickly focus on the presentation so that there's room enough for us to be directed by your inputs. Safe to say, right at the beginning, we have insisted with the matter of engaging with the new ministry on really expanding some of these issues. And our sense is that there is a need to have a thorough discussion around institutional alignment and where investments are going and whether we're getting better efficiencies out of those investments. But I think those are precisely the issues. I dare say at the beginning, Chairperson, it would be important on some occasion for us or any appropriate parties to come and address yourselves on the decline of technical skills in provincial and national departments. I think it would be very, very informative, because one of the things we picked up, you've raised quite correctly, is how it is that when you go to these places, you find consultants all over the place. That is not the only reason, but the decline is quite telling, and the picture is there to be shared with yourselves. So I do think that it would really help if we have a different occasion. If I may then, I take it, Chairperson, this delegation that's with me here is not known, so if I may just start here. My name is Advocate James Mlau. I'm the Acting DDG for Road Transport. On my right is Ma'am Joey Mlauzi. She's our Chief Director responsible for Infrastructure Planning and Industry Development. And this side is Sipho Dibakwane, who's in the Office of the DG. And that side is Masibonga Mzwakali, our new Parliament Liaison Officer. So I'll request that Joey takes us through what we had prepared as a presentation quickly, so that we then engage with the committee on all the matters raised. As I said, the structure of the presentation we had prepared was really wanting to recap on some of the issues and policy issues on the previous discussions, sharing with you what we have around RISA and the rural strategy, and then some of the issues we propose to do going forward. But I'm going to request Joey to take us through, if that's in order, Chair.
Thank you. In terms of recapping on issues raised at the previous meeting, we've highlighted the issues on the left there in the presentation. We made to understand that a perspective of the ADB was shared with the House on rural roads development, but not the Department of Transport strategies. So we'd like to outline that, and that flows from, on the right, the Road Infrastructure Strategic Framework for South Africa, the Rural Transport Strategy itself, and what the Samba Sonke program articulates in terms of the development of rural areas through road infrastructure. There was also an issue about the programmatizing of pronouncement by the President in the State of Nation Address and the National and pronouncement that were made in the National Assembly, which would have to be processed through MINMEC and COTO. Not all of the pronouncement would be addressed by the DOT per se, but it was setting the context for the provincial roads department, municipal roads departments, as well as national, in terms of what should be guiding annual performance plans for the particular years that the pronouncements were made. There was an issue around lack of uniform approach to Samba Sonke, the house shared experiences where there are different programs that are implemented by the provinces. On the right, we've indicated that we have the Sambasonke Program Guidelines document. As the House would remember, Sambasonke was adopted by MINMEC in February of 2011 as a framework that should guide roads development going forward. Importantly, the lever that allows the Department of Transport to then carry out what is articulated in Sambasonke would be the provincial road maintenance grant. However, the grant doesn't address all the road development issues, whereas the document itself talks to how we would want roads development to be undertaken in the country moving forward, not just focusing on the maintenance grant, which is confined to maintenance of provincial roads because of historical and other reasons. Then the other area I believe Advocate has addressed the supervision of consultants that does the work for most of our roads authorities because of lack of capacity and skills in roads departments. Then there was an issue raised on damage of the road network, which is caused by heavy vehicles, and what is being done about this. And there's a slide in the presentation that would talk to those issues. So we're also aware that the CSIR did a presentation that focused on the technical aspects in terms of roads development, looking at alternatives, and importantly, what they are doing as an institution, which can be disseminated and shared with roads authorities, and we'll talk to that towards the end of the presentation. On the heavy vehicle, on the issue of heavy vehicles causing damage on our road network, I think we just want to reemphasize that we have a national overload control strategy that stands on a number of pillars. Basically, it identifies problems of overloading in the country and solutions. And critical to mention is the fact that an assessment was done that showed where the heavy haul corridors are in the country. And out of that, we have a network of that shows those corridors. Out of that, an enforcement strategy, a law enforcement strategy, is meant to be developed to address overloading. One of the things that the strategy encourages is, given our challenges with law enforcement, the department would want to encourage industry to do self-regulation so that you do not enforce, but rather you get them to, into a situation where they are able to ensure that they are not overloaded by themselves. And in that regard, the department developed, together with industry and with the participation of the CSIR, the road traffic management system, which is a self-regulation system. Having developed that system, we realized that the uptake was slow. So during the 2009 financial year, we then developed awareness and a material for industry, informing them on what RTMS is and what the benefits are. And during 2010-2011, we as a department then sponsored awareness workshops, which were held throughout the provinces in the country. In 2010, we did them in about six of the provinces. In 2011, we followed up in four provinces. After that, industry then took the initiative. It is now ongoing, and they are driving that initiative. It has led to a number of users in terms of heavy vehicles getting accredited in the RTMS system and process. And essentially what the RTMS then does is that those companies that are accredited, the benefits that they have is that they do not have to, all the time when they go through weigh stations, they do not have to be weighed because the accreditation process is such that they ensure that they are not overloading, but there would be about 10% weighing that happens even with those RTMS companies. Members might have seen trusts that have a yellow diamond a sticker in front which is written RTMS, that's indicating that they are accredited. If I go back then on one of the challenges when the corridors were identified was the fact that you do not find overloading so much on your national roads because you have an operational weighbridge and on the national network. What happens then is that the users would know that the weighbridges are operating and they would use secondary roads. So what becomes important is the ability from a law enforcement point of view to be able to set up a mobile weigh stations. And through SANRAL, we are developing a mobile overload control unit that would be able to that would be deployed in critical corridors that are often used as bypassed by your heavy vehicle users on our networks. The RTMC also has a rolling enforcement plan, which amongst others looks at how to improve on issues of overload control. Dealing with both the weighing as well as the prosecution. So those are the key elements from the national overload control strategy. Then on the upgrading of low volume roads, we just drew from the guideline that exists the criteria that is meant to be used in terms of assessing when a road should be sealed, and that is what is highlighted on the slide there. The important thing is to show that the decision on upgrading from a gravel road to a sealed road is not only informed by the number of vehicles that are traveling on a road, but also their financial, economic, and socio-political considerations that are brought to bear on decisions for upgrading from gravel roads to a sealed road. Then in terms of the strategies, in 2006, the department passed through Cabinet the Road Infrastructure Strategic Framework for South Africa. 2007, this was followed by the passing of the Rural Transport Strategy, and then Samba Sonke comes in in support of both of those strategies. Those strategies highlight essentially, we've highlighted in that slide the key areas that addresses rural roads development from those strategies. From RITSA, the important element is the chapter that deals with road network and classification. Essentially, the reclassification of the road network based on the function that each road plays. There are six classes that are outlined in RIFSA, and access roads form part of class 4 and class 5 of the roads. And RIFSA then articulates that the reason why as a country, we need to reclassify our network based on the function of the road that it plays is so that we have a standard approach towards prioritizing and allocation of funding for roads. If you look at the criteria, the cost-benefit analysis criteria that is used, amongst others, in determining the upgrading of the roads or the investment in roads, often it disadvantages access roads because you're considering them within the broader port that has economic roads and so on. But with the classification, we want to reach a stage in deciding on road investment, where we look at funding allocation for the different classes, so that you don't have class 4 roads and class 5 roads competing with class 1 roads. We would be able as a department to then make a determination to say, after the reclassification, you have X number of kilometers in the entire country that constitutes your class 1 roads, and these are the standards and the levels that you need to maintain those classes of roads. in terms of your backlog and what is required on investment, this is what is required. And you do that for all the classes, so that then when you allocate, you're allocating for the classes and the needs per class, as opposed to them competing. Then on the rural transport strategy itself, it talks to provision of rural transport infrastructure, provision of rural transport services, the promotion of non-motorized and immediate means of transport, which are very critical in rural areas. And then the aspect of regulation and safety, as well as capacity building and monitoring, will unpack them, unpack those in the next slides. Samba Sonke then prioritizes or stands on those five pillars. Increase investment in maintenance of key arterial routes to support the rural economy. Focus on cost-efficient use of labor-absorptive methodologies in road construction and maintenance. The whole exercise of knowing your network, where we've presented before that in terms of the exercise that we have run, as a country, we only have condition information on 4% of our roads in the municipal sphere, which in the main are the roads that we are talking about here, access roads, and they constitute about 300,000 kilometers and above of our entire road network. And then improving access to schools and clinics and other public facilities, as well as delivering a safe road environment. Just to pick on what RIFSA tried to address, we've highlighted the challenges there, but essentially it meant to provide the country or the road sector within government with a framework that addresses the institutional challenges that were identified flowing from the constitutional assignment of functions for roads across the different spheres. It also wanted to address issues of network development and reclassification, issues of information and decision support for optimal decision making on the development of roads, as well as sustainable funding and capacity challenges that besets the road sector. On access roads development, we've picked just on two areas that RISA articulates amongst others. One, it requires that greater accent than hitherto, this was from 2005, had to be placed on rural access roads as well as on the metropolitan and urban road network. That's on page 53 of RIFSA. On page 83, it talks to the need to address challenges of access roads development, where Department of Transport will, in partnership with roads authorities in planning, establish access roads development program that will be used as a vehicle to target resources towards elimination of access roads backlogs, focusing on areas of poverty, remote rural communities and settlements in fringes. And this process, importantly, will be integrated with the current initiative that promotes development of labor-intensive construction methods in each of the provinces and maximization of labor intensity in the delivery of road infrastructure for both capital and maintenance programs and projects. This articulation then informed the focus of the expanded public works program allocation of 3.2 billion in 2006-2007 when we started expanding the public works program. The understanding being that we would focus on labor intensive construction methods and maintenance and programs to address access roads development, dealing with issues of reducing poverty, creating jobs, whilst providing infrastructure. The rural transport strategy itself then stands on the on a number of pillars as highlighted and summarized in this slide. Chairperson, we also have an executive summary that will leave with the house of the rural transport strategy. As I indicated, it was passed by Cabinet in 2007, and some of the issues that are raised, it tries to talk to. And the challenge perhaps would be that since it was passed in 2007, both in terms of resources and programs, we need to enhance, or rather go back and create the energy that was created then in terms of implementing this, because it had the, what is on the slide there is the Rural Transport Development Program that talked to alignment of the rural transport strategy with other programs. For example, at the time it was the ISRDP, and critically the IDPs of municipalities. The pillars that it stood on were the provision of rural transport infrastructure.
Can I
okay.
ask you to do this? Be specific and be honest in your presentation. Because all of us do not come from here in Cape Town. We don't remain here. All of us leave Cape Town on Thursdays and Fridays, back to our constituencies. And our constituencies are the areas that you are referring to. So here, we want to find solutions. So we want the honesty efana nomntu ovuma izono phambi kukaThixo. Makuwukuthi nje i-strategy remained in paper, on paper, masisho kanjalo sithi i-strategy sapasa, azange kube na-allocation yama-funds, azange kube ne-implementation. Singagqokisi. We mustn't try to sugarcoat. Because you are not telling us a story as visitors in this country. We are citizens of this country. So when we call you to come and address an issue, it is because it is the issue that we have information on. Because we come from those areas. So when you are presenting in the National Assembly, be mindful of the fact that members that are serving in the National Assembly are coming from different provinces and they have homes. And homes of everyone are located somewhere in a particular municipality and a particular village. Ukuze sizwane, just be honest. Unga sugarcoat. We are not going to penalize you as a person. We are going to deal with the problem. Thank you for that intervention, Chairperson. Indeed, what the Chairperson is highlighting is the truth, and I was going to, after highlighting the pillars that the strategy was supposed to stand on, then indicate what the challenges in implementing the strategies has been. Essentially, the strategy wanted to say that we need to develop your rural infrastructure, focusing on access roads in rural areas. And in conjunction with that, we need to be looking at how we improve rural transport service delivery. In other words, the studies were done before the strategy was developed, which showed that there's a lot of economic and social programs that are being developed and run in deep rural areas. And one of the critical challenges was that you do not have, both in terms of infrastructure and services, transport that allows rural areas to jump from what in the strategy it says, a big jump from village to towns. And the department, it stands on the infrastructure leg, on a services leg, as well as a focus on non-motorized transport and regulation of safety, where it was supposed to look at the realities of communities where the only source of transport would be your buckies. How do you address public transport services in those contexts? One of the critical recommendations was that we needed to pilot micro freight model that addresses both the mobility and the access issues in rural areas. And as Chairperson has highlighted, after the strategy was adopted, as a department, we've had challenges in funding the implementation of the different legs of the strategy. What we've been able to achieve through a rural transport grant, which we have since changed from funding access road development in rural areas into funding the development of road asset management systems in 21 district municipalities. There was only about 35 million made available for that. The biggest challenge, Chairperson, also links back to the fact that in terms of assignment of functions, the national department is not able to implement projects directly in rural areas. So even the projects that we implemented using the funding for this particular strategy were implemented on the understanding that we are piloting. And then once you've learned lessons from the pilot and you have developed a program that has been piloted, that has been shown to work, you can then roll it out through the relevant authorities that are able to implement, right? So there were a few projects that were implemented in the Eastern Cape, in Sekhukhune, and in KwaZulu-Natal district municipalities. But we should also indicate that even in those programs, we ended up implementing one leg of the strategy as opposed to all of them, because when you go through the strategy, it looked at integrating all the legs so that when you develop roads in rural areas, you're not developing them for their own sake, but you're doing linkages with markets and with other social services in those areas. Okay. So some of the challenges then in the implementation, I'm not sure why this thing has gone off. Okay. Some of the challenges then that were experienced in implementing the strategy and will continue to be experienced is the technical skills in the transport sector as a whole. This does not only relate to rural areas, but with provinces as well as and at national itself. The capacity of municipalities to implement the programs, the optimal split between work that is done in-house and work that is outsourced, but critically, we've tended to outsource work because we're not able to do it in-house. However, the required skills in terms of managing those consultancies also tend to be a challenge. The ongoing collection and updating of road network information, and in this regard, we have, as I've indicated, a shift focus from the grant to the road asset management system. Critically is the question of funding for access roads development. In the strategy itself at the time, we were looking at the possibility of establishing a rural access road development fund, but this has not happened. Okay. That's in terms of the rural transport strategy. On provincial programs, we've outlined the different types of programs that provinces are implementing. The point to be made here is that as much as provincial roads are not necessarily your class 4 and 5 access roads that we are talking about, they provide the linkages between communities and major centers of economic and other development. And in the slides, we've highlighted what the programs that are run by each of the provinces. And I think in terms of the issues that were raised, the point that we need to make is that we are undertaking a national benchmarking exercise through program support in the department to look at what are the key critical success factors for the different programs that are implemented by provinces, and what is it that we can uplift into a national program, which will be a guideline. Because what we also conscious of not doing or sensitive to not doing is to try and develop a one-size-fits-all into a program which would not be implementable in some provinces. For example, we did road shows with provinces last year on Samba Sonke, where we were looking at Zibambele as a model for implementation. But when we went to the Northwest as an example, we were going through, we were driving from project to project in terms of what has been gazetted, which they were supposed to be doing. And on one day, we drove about 700 kilometers. And in the 700 kilometers that we drove, there were times where for close to 300 kilometers, there are no communities, but those access roads are very critical. So clearly, if you're taking Zibambele as it stands and you want to transplant it into that environment, it would not work. However, it does not mean that as a province, they cannot develop for those populated area a version, a provincial version of Samba Sonke. So we've developed in the meantime a concept document which was shared with provinces as well as implementation guidelines that essentially guide provinces on how their programs should address those five key pillars of Samba Sonke that we've presented earlier. On progress to date, we are implementing your Know Your Network concept of Samba Sonke with provinces. There is still need, Chairperson, for this to be taken to the municipal sphere. I must hasten to say that we, for the first time in 2011-12 financial year, as a national department, we were directly responsible for the management of the provincial road maintenance grant, and we are into setting the required processes and systems in order for us to be effective in that. The plan is that in the next year or so, we will then be looking at the municipal infrastructure grant, which is the grant that funds roads development at the municipal level, and be able to apply lessons that are learned in the PRMG to address access roads development and other roads programs at a municipal sphere. So at that provincial level, provinces have been allowed to utilize 500 rands per kilometer to assess their road network in conducting visual condition assessments, and they can access up to 10 million to address capacity or technical capacity challenges, the hiring of technical staff to deal with road access and visual condition assessments. The Rural Transport Services and Infrastructure Grant, I've already indicated, we have refocused it so that it assists us to begin to develop asset management systems at a municipal sphere, and there are 21 district municipalities that we are working with. We've also, through the intervention of the minister then, come to an agreement with SANRAL that they would be able, as and when called to provide program management support to any province or municipality that would require such interventions. Then the last one, in terms of progress, talking specifically to the outcome, to what transpired after the meeting of the 22nd of May, was that we have engaged with the CSIR on the presentation that they have done, as well as the company that was delivering books to schools in terms of assessing lack of access and mobility for schools. We met with them on the 5th of June as well as on the 4th of June, and a critical outcome of that process was that a task team will be established to address the technical aspects in terms of what the CSIR presented, as well as issues of access to schools. The same engagement will be done with the Department of Health for access to clinics and health facilities. What is outstanding in terms of what we still need to take forward, Chairperson, is the finalization of the reclassification of roads and assignment of administrative responsibility at a municipal level. That will help us in dealing with unproclaimed roads, number one, but also ensuring that access roads development access roads are quantified and their condition is known, so that we can begin then to advocate properly for further funding. which leads to the second activity, which is engagements with National Treasury on adequacy of funding for roads development at a municipal level. Again, we must indicate that when we got funding for the provincial road maintenance grant, we have, in a sense, looked at the PRMG as if it will address all our challenges. The reality is the PRMG only focuses on issues of maintenance. We still remain with the perennial question or problem of roads being critically underfunded in the country. Vis-a-vis the need for roads development. And lastly, effective intergovernmental cooperation to support roads development at a local government level. Thank you, Chairperson.
Welcome, Honourable Pembroke. We did receive your apology and accepted it. Thank you. We have just had a presentation by the department. Before they did that, we outlined the purpose of the meeting as to why we had called them here. It's a number of issues, including issues that were raised by the DA in as far as the potholes are concerned. Those were members that we had here, and I think that they were getting a mandate from the PAT to come and raise those issues. And also including issues that were raised by communities. We are now going to show. What we came across when we visited provinces. Yes.
As I indicated, Chair, earlier, the presentation and where we angled it was really on the understanding that the portfolio committee wants to understand whether we have policy issues and we've done our national duty in these areas and what the levers of engagement are with provinces. I think that if you look at slide 8, I'm sorry it's not projecting now, I suspect myself that the question will be answered fairly largely on the affirmative, because you've rolled from your RIFSA, go back to the white paper, to RIFSA, rural transport strategy, to Samba Song. I think this, of course, the rural strategy is precisely that strategy. If you come to Samba Song, and now there's this challenge we have of a dedicated grant in which not everyone is following the methods we are rolling out, but nonetheless, even if they were, you are actually only limited to maintenance. So I think the real issue, at least as a department in this point, comes down to this. What are the levers that a national government has in driving policy implementation, desired policy implementation, in a space where it doesn't really have institutional responsibility, stroke funding? I think that, to me, is the real conundrum. So if you take issues of access, I mean, members have spoken about the tree of death, among other things, in the Eastern Cape. The issue is when you go to the tree of death, legally that is the responsibility of the Department of Roads and Transport in the Eastern Cape, right? Can you sit at National Department and say, or even in Parliament and say, Eastern Cape, no, you can only draw their attention to that. Now, I think what would be more useful, and it's important that we say this because we're discussing the same thing with the minister yesterday, there has been an arrangement previously when ministers are called or Parliament is called, when they go to site, even if it's not legally their mandate, they do have resources to leverage. So in other words, you'll find that the national department and the provincial department are actually partnering in building that bridge. Maybe it's too expensive for the province, it's not within their budget, and so on. That is one thing that is missing. The second one is The structures of coordination, because when we're talking about all of these policies and documents we've developed, there's a whole lot of platforms we're leaving out that are existing between national and provinces, including local government, where we're discussing and agreeing on policy. In the context now of performance agreement between ministries and the presidents and the ministries and their sectors, what enforcement mechanisms do you have? So if you go to the Northwest and find that deliberately in the projects that are declared, they are not following the methodology, what is the recall? From where we sit, the recall mechanisms that lie in DORA are very limited. They are very limited. The Division of Revenue Act would say if you find a violation here, you would write a letter within 7 days to there. It doesn't create any punitive arrangement. In point of fact, these program support she is referring to, we have commissioned that we want to find out, because it was the first time in the last financial year that projects that will be done had to be published. Well, we have information that some provinces deviated from those projects. And we need to make a case of what is it that you do when people deviate from that. But for me, I think really there are two issues, therefore. We can sit and write this policy and tweak it, but the fact of the matter is here you have a rural transport strategy. If you don't have funding for it, and it, your functions in the sphere where you own it do not allow you to intervene, it's as good as dead. But here's the second example. You have responsibility now. You are managing a grant for dealing with a secondary road network, right? In provinces, you must implement that. What do you do when you find that they deviate? What are your recall powers? So I think a Chairperson, for me, just to restate, and the real issue is that someone else might read the DORA differently than we are reading it. Of course, the National Department has limitations in terms of where can it be. Because one of the things that happens on the PRMG, provinces do write business plans, and they submit them to us for approval. This is before the financial year starts, before those projects are even. Of course, there was a case at the beginning which said they were allowed to continue on methodologies they had chosen if they had already made commitments when the PRMG was still PIG. So that's fine. But the issue is that if, in fact, they declare a method to us, like you would know last year, in fact, on Friday, we're presenting this report to MINMEC. Here is what provinces said they would do. Some of them only achieved 25% of what they had promised to do. And the catch comes here. If you design a program on labor-intensive methodology on your business plan, but you don't put it out on time, or you don't have the capacity internal to the department to put it out on time, appoint consultants and contractors, you only do it in November when you're supposed to start in April, you're going to have to do fiscal dumping of sorts. Because you are now wanting to finish the money and just the project must be done. So you cannot not employ the numbers of people who you had hoped to employ. And the issue really is, when that happens in what you've been given as NDOT, what is your recall power? So if, I just wanted to emphasize that. Thanks very much. Sorry about that.
Thank you very much. Menage, I like that kind of honest, because it takes us to the root causes of the problem, so that we don't look at indicators. We look at the root causes of the problem, because you are presenting to the highest decision-making structure of the country. And if the root causes of the problem are the institutional arrangements and the powers and functions, it is this structure that needs to deal with those issues. We can't be bandaging a wound. We need to clean the wound and take out the pus so that the wound can begin to heal. Okay, let us talk to the pictures. That picture, when we arrived in in Harding. We had been to Harding in 2011. No, we had been to Harding in 2011, and we raised the issue of potholes that are where cement is used, like you can see, to close an asphalt pothole. That is a truck. It is full of cement, and then there is a wheelbarrow. A person that is on top there would then offload the wheelbarrow down to the people that are on the road, and then we'll scoop the cement and pass it to those people, and then those people will just take that mixture as it is and put it on a pothole and then stamp it. Remember, in this committee there was Honorable Farrow. He was part of the delegation and is a qualified engineer. And I had been in Ugu District Municipality, and we had, and Harding is Umzwabantu local municipality. It is part of Ugu. And we had in Ugu successfully closed more than 6,000 potholes in 3 months using a cold asphalt method, which was presented to this portfolio committee. So when we went to Harding in 2011, we actually started with the provincial team of the Department of Transport in Ugu and showed them the potholes that had been repaired whilst I was a deputy mayor in Ugu, which were still intact. We then proceeded to Harding because that is where I am born, and I had observed the shady work that was done, not by contractors. This work is done by employees of the Department of Transport in KwaZulu-Natal. A technical engineer was part of that work. It wasn't a contractor. We raised that issue in 2011, and we were promised that it was going to be corrected. We went back this year, and on that day we found them working. This is the kind of work that they were doing. And this doesn't only damage the road infrastructure, it also damages the tires of the cars, and it also damages, it causes accidents, because the surface doesn't, the cement type doesn't bond with the asphalt, and when rain comes it opens up again. But what then happens, even if the rain has not come, is that that part is not even, it then causes ama humps emgagweni, and if not, those are shaisa. That is the situation that we are dealing with. And we are then saying, if at provincial level you would have a technician, an engineering technician who had been to a technicon allowing this to happen, what is the role of the National Department of Transport, and who ratifies this? Because even the portfolio committee in that province had not seen these things. They were dragged by the National Portfolio Committee to just see the roads. They don't go there on their own. And when we have discovered these things and we produce reports, how does this information get to MINMEC? And what are the discussions in MINMEC how, what is the role played by MINMEC when these things have been raised by a portfolio committee at national level? Honorable Soka.
I appreciate the presentation that was made by the department, led by the DDG. I was a bit lost, Chairperson, in the presentation, because I was trying to catch up with the presentation until you intervened. I must say, confess, until you intervened. And out of that intervention, to summarize what has been said here today, to me, it's clear that our strategy will remain on paper. That's the first thing. Our strategy will remain on paper. And it has come very loud and clear. It's because the challenge is funding. Because you can have beautiful plans, but if you don't have the tools to translate that strategy through funds, it means we'll have a talk shop even today. Surely also the presenter was grappling, because at the back of her mind she knows that there's no funds. So what is the point of us? The second point which came clear to me is the question of outsourcing vis-a-vis the internal skills that we have. Whilst we don't have funds, but those warm bodies that we are having, seems to me they are in a square peg, because they don't have the necessary skills to deal with the road infrastructure in as far as fixing them. That's why we are having this kind of a picture that we are dealing with. And now outsourcing vis-a-vis the funds that we don't have, it's also a challenge. You don't have funds, but you still outsource. So in other words, the little bit that you have must go to another direction. Instead of having those funds directed to internal units of your skills that you have, so that they can fix the roads. I can summarize it in that fashion. Now, my problem also, Chairperson, as we have piloted some of these projects, it means we'll pilot forever if we don't have funds, because there's still a meeting that is outstanding between ourselves and Treasury to fund these projects. Now, I would have loved to see a situation where the department will say, this is the entry point, this is the base from which we're moving. From that strategy, we've moved so many inches, so many centimeters. And as such, we can't move beyond this centimeter because there's no fund. As a result, we request your portfolio committee to assist us in securing some funding for the next financial year. Because 35 million rand for that project, that those pilot projects, it's a drop in an ocean. In fact, Chairperson, I would have moved a step further to say maybe we need to call the relevant portfolio committees from the various provinces to come here and account on those issues that we thought that they are doing and yet they are not doing, so that we avoid this kind of a situation. Rather than us going to them, let's call them up, all of them, all the chairpersons of these various portfolio committees, and have a bite and interaction with them so that we understand their premise from which they move to fix these rules. Otherwise, my question then directly to the committee, to the department. Now, if your strategy remains on paper, so what is your turnaround? So that what must we tell our constituencies? Because surely this strategy does not start today. It has been coming for quite some time. What is your thinking on a serious note? Because we must fix South African roads in a dramatic way. We can't be as business as usual Surely also yourself, you must find appetite to come to this committee to say, today I'm talking boldly because we've made giant steps. It must not be as if, oh, again, and you do not like to be squeezed every day over an issue over and over again. So what do you think, as you see the situation, and I would like you to put it very clear, it's challenges, it's not outstanding matters, these are challenges. Because if I can ask you, because if something is outstanding, it means there's a start that has been done, very loud and clear. You know, so here is the challenge. Chairperson, I would like to know, how do they see translating their strategy into action so that all of us can be happy, even they themselves can be happy about this presentation. Otherwise, to me, as we stand, where I'm seated, it does not tell a good story. It means we have to rework. And also, we should have a program that takes us forward, a programmatic presentation that takes us forward. I understand the policy directives, but surely translate those policy issues into action. None.
Thanks, Chairperson. My first question is just a clarity one. You use a lot of acronyms and things which I don't understand because I've not been on here for more than about 4 or 5 months. Some of them I've worked out during the presentation, but I don't know the following ones. RTMS, I don't know what that is. RAMS, R-A-M-S, I'm not sure what that one is. And if you could just clarify those for me, it will just help me to understand the rest of the presentation. I worked out what RFSA is and the other one, so that's just those two, if you can explain them. And then I have some questions. Do you find, some of these gravel roads you upgrade. You upgrade them to what the chairperson called low-volume sealed roads and so on and so on. Do you find that there's a bitumen shortage of tar that is hampering the work in the provinces? We've heard discussions in the media and rumors that there's a shortage in South Africa. When I was on the Transportation Committee of the City of Johannesburg before coming to Parliament, that was in between 2005 and 2009, the City of Johannesburg had to produce their own tar because there was a shortage then. And I hear rumors now again this year that there's still shortages. Is this a problem that we get in the provinces, not enough tar? I mean, it's a simple practical thing, but if there's a problem, if our tar is all being exported or not enough is being produced, I mean, then surely government will need to take action about that to sort that out. Certainly, the effect of Transnet's, branch lines collapsing. Transnet tried to sell a number of them to private investors and nobody wanted to buy them because they've deteriorated so badly that the cost of renovating those lines is too high. I understand anyway. What impact is that having on our rural roads when factories and farmers need to transport their goods? Is the burden becoming too high because the trains don't do it anymore? So now the roads are having to handle it, but we don't get more budget after the collapse of those branch lines. I think the Honourable Suka is quite correct. We did get now the high-level strategy in this document. Thank you. We asked for that. We got that. What we didn't get were the tables that would show us whether we're getting worse or better. Are the amount of roads being surfaced, the gravel roads being reworked, increasing or decreasing? Is the amount of gravel roads turned into low volume sealed roads or whatever you want to call them, is it getting better or worse? I understand from a document that was presented in this committee in January that the Eastern Cape Roads and Public Works Department claims that there's a 9 billion rand backlog on the surfacing of their roads. That's one province. So is that backlog getting worse? Is it getting better? I think that's the thing that Honourable Suka is digging for. He's saying with the strategy, we understand, but the performance, we can only evaluate as a parliamentary committee if we've got can compare year one, year two, year three, year four. If we don't have that charts, those charts, then we're sort of just talking about frameworks all the time and strategies, but we don't know whether we're shooting at the blind man in the dark. You know, it's hard to know whether it's getting better or worse. And of course, if it gets much worse, then we have to say to the department, well, we need to know that, because the chairperson will have to start writing letters to Treasury to say it's getting worse. You know what I'm saying? We don't know from this presentation whether it's getting better on the gravel roads or worse, and how much worse, and that kind of thing. We have no targets to evaluate. I don't agree that it's just funding. It's not just funding. Yes, there's a funding problem and a limit. I understand that. I understand also that for several years there's been underinvestment in our roads. I agree with that. I think there's been a large underinvestment, and that's we're reaping the problem of that. But I also think at provincial level there's a technical skills problem. I mean, we've just had an example that the chairperson showed us of a technical person using methods that are not approved by the department and are, in fact, not even first world. It's, you can't do that. So I think there's a technical skills problem in the provinces. Provinces are not delivering even when they get the money. And then they either have to hand the money back or they spend it on other things. They don't actually do the technical work because they don't have the skills, or they outsource it. That report I'm referring to in January said that 70% of the work maintaining roads in the Eastern Cape is outsourced. So there's a skills problem, clearly. And then I think the funding gets moved elsewhere. You know, you spoke about fiscal dumping. Well, that's another way of saying we have to order new vehicles because we can't spend it on maintaining the roads or something. We have to spend it on something else quickly. But again, we can't evaluate that. And I'm sure you as a department are frustrated. And that leads to my final question. Do you think with the current, what the chairperson called institutional arrangements, that essentially some of the provincial transport departments or transport and public works departments or whatever they are becoming like rogue states? Because it sounds to me like, you know, my party is in favour of federalism. I understand the ruling party is not so in favour of federalism, but when you get down to the ground in these provinces, it sounds a lot to me like the Swiss, yeah, stay out of our province. We'll do our own thing. It sounds very much that these provinces are considering their, or the transport departments in the provinces sound to me, listening to this presentation, that they are considering themselves autonomous, like rogue states. Give us the money, but then stay out of our province. We'll spend it on lunch or new cars or, I don't know, whatever. Do you feel as a department, and you can tell us your opinion, it's not a fact, there's no litmus test we can do, but do you get the impression from your dealing with the departments in the provinces that they just are not accountable to anybody, that they're becoming like independent authorities that just, because if that's the case, obviously then we need to think as a parliament how that structure works. If the rogue states in each province just do their own thing, maybe we have to rethink that. Just your opinion, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
I am going to... I have recognized Honorable Mangele and Lagute for the second bite of questions, because I think these questions need thorough engagement, and there are issues that I would want to add on what has been raised by other members who have taken, like Honorable Suga and Honorable Oris. What I would want to add on what Honorable Suga was saying is that
He is saying you are presenting to us a strategy. And if I heard you correctly, it is a strategy that was approved by Cabinet in 2007. But you are also saying that that strategy has not been implemented as it is. Part of it has been implemented, not the whole strategy. Which brings us to the second question that says, if that is the case, how does it happen that Cabinet would approve a strategy and then Cabinet would not approve the financial implications of the strategy? Because a budget is not a dumb sack. It's like in a home. If I say to my children, write me a list of the groceries that are needed, then they give me the list. And I say, it's okay, we will buy all this that is in this list. But I don't sit down to make a thorough calculation of how much each item that is in the list costs. I then give my children the list as it is, and then I give them money that is not matching the list. Would I say to my children, I have provided them with the groceries that they asked for? And if my children were to go to the social workers and complain that I don't feed them, would I win that case that I do feed my children because I asked them to, I have approved the list of the groceries and I have given them money when I know that I did not give them enough money to buy all the things that they needed? Then the second question that I'm asking is, how is it possible that PRASA comes here to this portfolio committee from 2009 when we were constituted and say, CEO of PRASA would stand here and say, portfolio committee, I'm raising a red flag. If you don't get this money that we need as PRASA, don't blame us. Don't blame me as the CEO with my staff, and don't blame the board of PRASA because the rolling stock is outdated, the railway lines are outdated. So if the people of this country ban the trains because you have refused to do your work, don't blame me. Stand up and say you refused to say to Parliament, PRASA needs money. We need new trains, and we need to upgrade the railway line. Why did we not hear the same passion from the department? Because we have not heard the department crying for a budget to implement this strategy. A department would come and talk and present, but they would not be specific to say, there is a strategy that we have developed, and we are passionate, we want to implement this strategy, and we have calculated, we would need so much money, because to PRASA we even asked, how much do you need? We have heard you are raising a red flag, how much do you need? Why were we asking that? Because we know that there is a budget review process through which we can influence a budget. There is also the medium-term expenditure framework. Why are we not hearing that from the department? That is the first question. The second question is, the issue of skills was not identified today. It was in the SONA of 2001. The state president then, Thabo Mbeki, said South Africa would need to develop the kind of skills that are needed to develop this country, are required to develop the economy of this country. Go and read that SONA, 2001. Now, how would it happen that in 2012 we have not developed those skills? And we have called this department to come and present to us a skills, a human resource development strategy in line with the needs of the Department of Transport. Bafika babhibhidla. Babamba beyeva. Sabaphindisa emuva sathi ayi abana ungathi aniyazi indaba yenu. Don't sugarcoat. Because we had been to China and we were told that the Chinese government had given South Africa 200 million to develop the skills. And the South African government had only utilized 30 million when we went to China in 2010. So it is not an issue of, issues are not raised, problems are not being identified. It is how we respond to those issues that are being raised. The last one is, Mina, I want us to talk like we are going to die tomorrow. We are sabu pegere no kufa so ya abon kuthe cha ngiyafa manje ngifuna ukwengena ezulwini zonke zami zonke mangizifume. I want us to talk like that because that is how the situation is out there. Thina masifika kuma constituency offices, we are asked questions that require us to speak as if we are dying tomorrow. The question that I'm coming to is the question that is being asked by Honorable Oris in terms of powers and functions. We are a unitary state. Department is charged with the responsibility of policy formulation and coordination. Mina, I want to understand, what is meant by coordination? I am saying this because I was in a district municipality. And in terms of powers and functions also, a district municipality has a responsibility of developing an integrated development plan. And I was responsible for that. None of national department representatives would come. Only Sandras attended AMA meetings of the planning forum. Even provincial departments would send junior staff that are not responsible for planning. We would have an integrated development plan that takes into consideration the plans of the local municipalities. But the plans of the provincial departments and the plans of the national departments were their own plans. They are not integrated in the plans of the district municipality, which is what was causing a serious problem in terms of implementation and allocation of resources. A local municipality, a plan, we are going to have
a district municipality, we are going to have a fresh vegetable market, and the vegetables would come from these local areas that are good in terms of our national special development perspective. But you would find the relevant departments that have to provide the infrastructure that would then unlock and ensure that those communities are able to engage in agricultural activities to feed the market. So which Lauma plans are not speaking to those needs, because Lauma departments are working on the Leo plan. Question that I'm asking then, to add on what Honorable Oris is saying, is, are we operating as if we are a federal state, not a unitary state? In your view, just be honest, it's not your problem. Nina, you are presenting problems as they are. Because in our view, taking just one program, we did not see what you presented to us when we went to provinces. It was no longer what you had presented to us. They were doing their own thing. And it's all these different programs that are happening. And I don't understand, Minuguti, why would it happen in other countries? When you go to Cuba, they will tell you one program. This is what we do when we maintain the roads, and everybody understands that as that program. You go to China, this is what we do when we upgrade the railway infrastructure, and everybody, national, provincial, local. What is the difference in South Africa?
Member, thank you very much. I'll start off. I'm sure that my colleagues might want to add. Look, the fact that we've now sketched this policy framework, and we haven't really given you a picture that says, is it getting worse or is it getting better? There are certain things that we prepare.